two scared siblings.
All right. Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to
Two Scared Siblings.
Ah, finally in unison.
Yeah, I did it.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah. You broke down. All right. Well, I'm glad. That's a good start.
Yeah.
That feels right.
Actually, I think that's a wrap.
Yeah, no. Okay, we're done.
All right. Good night.
Okay, so yes, we are hilarious. For tonight, we have a new drama and
drama.
Yes, but
maybe
we also
not just
have
drama.
Yeah, we also have some killer whale action.
Yeah.
Yes, and I have a disappearance. That's right. I did research that was sent to me by Andrea that I read today.
Yeah, so I researched.
Yeah. And I'm taking the credit, but that's okay. That's okay. Actually, Wikipedia gets most of the credit, so.
Yeah, I kind of just sent him a link thinking, you know.
She just sent me the Wikipedia link.
He could research it further.
Yeah. Yeah, except I slept through the past couple of days all the way. I just have not been awake enough to do research. So,
yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm afraid it'll have to work around my Rip Van Winkle routine. Yes. All right.
So, okay.
Did you wanna go into your drama first? Or?
No, I think you should do your drama first.
Okay.
As always. Yay.
Fine, we're not spicing things up. All right. So, I'm gonna tell you briefly, for once, about the time that I got alcohol poisoning, and this also kind of serves as a cautionary tale. Don't drink a lot
until you're poisoned.
Yeah, don't do that. So I was at a beach. I chose kind of a beach-themed thing going on with a friend of mine who will remain unnamed. You know what? Let's just call him Unnamed. Yeah.
Unnamed. That's a
unnamed.
Really good
name. Yeah, I know. He gets to be super mysterious in a way. I kind of did him a favor. But so Unnamed and I went to a beach in Vancouver where I was staying with Unnamed in his apartment. And this was like 4 years ago. So we bought a bunch of liquor and went to the beach, because that's how you enjoy nature, is when you're drunk. That's how you enjoy most things, is by being drunk. Don't actually take that as, like, advice.
He's not
by.
Qualified to give that kind of advice.
I'm actually a recovering alcoholic. So that's something I'll talk about from time to time. Anyway, this was kind of right when I was getting into that. Like, I was starting to drink too much, but I wasn't drinking as much and as, like, to my detriment as I could have been, but I was trying. I was getting there. I was making an effort. Yeah, it's something I kind of consciously decided to do too, knowing it would ruin my life.
As long as you try.
Definitely don't though, because it does ruin your life. Experiment was a success and exactly how I expected it to end. So we went to the beach with a ton of alcohol. We found a secluded spot on the beach, and this beach is kind of like bit of a famous party beach in the city of Vancouver in Canada. And so we went there. It was super busy. Like, this was one, like, the second to last night that I was... Actually, this was the last night of my trip. I remember this distinctly because I had to take a 13-hour bus ride the next day while recovering from alcohol poisoning, or not recovering, actually. Just being poisoned.
Yeah, just dying.
Just kind of dying, actually. Yeah, I did have jaundice on the bus.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was, like, worried that the bus was going to show up and mom was going to pick me up and find, like, you know, a dead body.
Like, dead Ren?
Yeah, I literally thought that was a possibility. I was, like, going to write her a note and stick it in my, like, shorts pockets. Yeah, and hope that it wasn't thrown out, but... We were at the beach, having a good time, starting to drink, tossing back gin, Mickey's, and other things like that. And we decided, like, once we got super smashed, we were going to go to a party with Unnamed's friends. So we walked very drunkenly from the beach, which was beautiful, by the way. It was awesome. It was a good time. Everyone else around us was probably drunk, too, in my defense. And we bought more liquor to set off for our bus trip. But before we went to the bus, we stopped at a restaurant. Well, by restaurant, I mean McDonald's. And and we didn't eat there. My friend just needed to go to the bathroom. So he went to the bathroom, innocently leaving the what's that stuff? Jaeger. Yeah, that's
Ew.
The stuff that tastes like root beer flavored cough syrup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
delicious.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, well, I don't know. I like Jaeger bombs, but
it's not bad.
That's
I don't
not
like the
what
bombs.
I did. I love the Edgar bombs. I just know. Like how they're done. They're just,
we've,
like, fun.
We've discussed this before, and I
it's
just
important.
Don't like
it. It's, like, the only way to do Jaeger, but I did not do it this time. I just kind of Jaeger bombed. Ha.
Oh, my
That's
God.
That's what happened, yeah.
Nope.
I bombed myself with Jaeger, because what I did was, while he was in the bathroom, I just opened this in the middle of the McDonald's, just cracked open into it, and I'd already drank, like, two Mickeys and half a bottle of wine or something.
Jesus.
Yeah, no, I'm a tank. I'm 5'3". I'm surprised I'm not dead. But considering how much I tend to drink, so, well, not anymore, actually, like I said, recovering and doing very well. So it's lucky I didn't die, or I would have never had the chance to get better. Yeah, when he was
That's
in the bathroom.
True. That's
yeah.
Hard to recover from.
Yeah, it would have been. And I came close to it several times on this alcoholic journey of mine. Like, you know, a few months ago. Like, yeah, it's always kind of a narrow brush with death, and it's not as fun or glamorous as I make it look.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Drinking Jaeger in a McDonald's bathroom sounds extremely
Well, I didn't
glamorous.
Drink it in the bathroom. I just drank it in the McDonald's.
Oh.
My friend went to the bathroom, and I just opened the fucking Jaeger in front of multiple people who I think just didn't want to mess with me because I was that drunk. I probably looked rough, even though I'm tiny and not rough at all. And I just tossed it back, right? I drank half the bottle. I didn't realize this. I just kind of tossed it back and drank and drank and drank and drank it. And then I passed it to him when he came out of the washroom. He was like, holy shit. What the fuck? This
what
is full.
To
yeah, like, yeah. And
was it a Mickey or like?
No. This was a
full size.
This was a
2.6.
Yeah, this is like a 2.6. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was on antidepressants at this point in time too. I didn't take one that night because I didn't want to absolutely destroy my liver in one fell swoop. Yeah, so we got home because we decided not to go to the party. I was passing out on the bus and like saying things deliriously while crying in a loud voice. And people were looking at me, and Unnamed was kind of just patting my hair. And then we went back to, like, and I only vaguely remember these things. And I Unnamed didn't give me too many more details.
That's
probably for my benefit. Yeah. Probably to save me some, like, extreme embarrassment. Yeah, because I've said some fucking weird things while drunk, as you know, but
mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, and it wasn't a psychosis with Unnamed, thank goodness,
it
but it was
like,
blackout, it was
yeah.
bad. Yeah, so we went back home to his apartment after stumbling, like, out of the bus station into a cab while I was still talking deliriously and, like, telling Unnamed how much I love him, and that's true, that's a true part, I do love him, he's very dear to me. And, like, crying still and kind of also passing out, like, snore cry, like, half and half. But we managed to get back to the apartment. And when we got there, I just forced myself to puke, like, a lot. Because that was my tactic back then. I was like, yeah, this will work in me not dying, right? If I just puke it all up.
Yeah.
So, forced myself to puke a lot. Yeah, yeah, foolproof, yeah. Yeah. Foolish is more like...
No, stop it.
No, these are good jokes.
No.
I'm right. You should be writing these things down for future use at parties where you want to find your future husband. And
okay.
Yeah, you gotta charm someone into the net. And I'm giving you all the tools you need right now.
Thanks, Ren.
You're welcome. I look out for you.
So you puked and puked.
Yeah, and then passed out. And the next day, we slowly woke up, watched a lot of Potion Cellar and related memes while I died. And I had to take the 13-hour bus. And I was so hungover, I could barely walk. I could barely move. But I managed to do both things. And yeah, that 13-hour bus ride, I like definitely thought I was dying for sure. That was fun. Because I took a bus from Vancouver to Calgary. So it's like between 9 and 13 hours. And we were on the worst half of that. Yeah, at one point, and this is kind of where the story ends, except for, you know, my beautiful recovery story, which I won't go into yet, but it's so heartfelt and beautiful, a single tear. Yeah, I darted into the bathroom on the bus briefly, and I checked myself out in the mirror because I was just pouring sweat, just drenched. It was nasty. I feel bad for whoever had to sit by me. I think one person who had to sit by me actually did make a face. And I just kind of stared out the window and tried to, like, blend myself into the window. But when I went to the bathroom those few times, like, the whites of my eyes were not so white. They were yellowish. The tips of my fingers were yellowish. At this point in time, I had an idea of what that meant, but I didn't, you know, I don't know. I was in a bad place. I didn't take death as seriously. Like, I did, and I knew it was a thing that could happen, but it didn't quite bother me yet. Luckily, I'm not like that now. So things have gotten a lot better, and I have not alcohol poisoned myself, although I've obviously gotten close and seemed to be trying again. Not now, but I seemed to try multiple times since that incident in the past few years, and now I'm actually in a good place. So yeah, that was the time that I got full-blown alcohol poisoning, and my liver was very unhappy enough to turn my flesh yellow.
Jesus.
On a 13-hour bus ride where I could do nothing about it.
Except yep. lay there and die.
Yep, yep, cautionary tale. Yep.
Yeah.
And some asshole stole my seat.
All right.
So that's that.
That's
things
a good
have
story.
Gotten way better. Yeah. Drinking is bad. I've learned that in a very hard way over and over again.
But in a very conclusive way.
Yeah, when you learn things the hard way, they tend to stick.
Yeah.
Better, at least, than they would otherwise.
Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of similar events, but not quite, Andrea,
yeah.
you have a drama story to tell as well. And it's also mental health related
in
a way.
And I was going to give you a quick update.
Yeah.
Gaston has not contacted me.
Okay, so that's a quick update on a previous drama story.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I kind of just like abruptly stopped talking about Gaston. And I was like, oh, I'll just let you know what happened. He disappeared.
Yeah, that's what happened.
He didn't exactly ghost me because I haven't been trying to contact him.
Yeah, it's you can't really tell if you're being ghosted.
We just haven't really contacted each other.
Yeah, you kind of are technically ghosting him in a way, but it's hard to do that if someone doesn't try.
We're kind of mutually ghosting, though.
Mutually ghosting, non-ghosting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, is it ghosting if you don't try to contact somebody?
But you refuse
to? But they
to?
Don't contact you?
Yeah, but I mean, Andrea has kind of taken a stand in that, like, you know,
because
she wanted him
I
to put in some
I left the
effort.
Ball in his court.
Yeah.
I contacted him for the last time.
A week and a half ago?
A week and a half ago, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, I'll give you a call. I'll call you soon. I'll call you. And then
yeah.
he never did. And I'm like, eh,
he said
you know
that
what?
While
I just
there.
Don't have the patience for this kind of ridiculous. He's 37.
Yeah, I
Jesus
know.
Motherfucking
yeah.
Christ.
Yeah, he's older. And like, we.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've
no.
never.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I've met a lot of people in their 30s who are kind of like still like that.
Stuck in
high school or something.
Oh, and he was the one who was like, yeah, I'm looking for somebody who doesn't play games, who knows what she wants.
Yeah, those
and then
exact
he
words.
Plays this stupid game. So I just
at least
know.
we think that's what's happening. That's one theory, is that he's kind of testing to see if she's playing a game by playing a game himself.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, trying to get her to contact him first, that he knows that she's not going to play it cool when he doesn't contact her. But in my opinion, if you want someone who doesn't play games, you can't play them yourself.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then, like, fuck
Plus,
that.
Plus, I'm not really playing a game. I told him.
No.
He said he'd call me. He didn't
he
call
didn't.
Me.
Yeah.
And I just took that as a hint.
Yeah, ball is really in the court there.
Really
yeah.
in his court. Yeah, it's not in mine. And I'm not chasing somebody. And, yeah.
No, no, because that's the thing. With relationships, it's got to be mutual. People have to try on their end, too. And
yeah.
another theory we have is that he's just bad at communicating. Like, some rough things might be happening. Who knows? We don't know.
Yeah,
but
there's one thing, like, difference between bad communication and no communication.
Yeah, like, that's true, too. Yeah, when I'm having a bad week, which is, like bad mental health week, which is often,
mm-hmm.
I do message my friends who I know I'm not going to be able to talk to very, like, regularly. Like, I've given them all kind of warnings. I have time being like, yeah, I might be pretty absent. I often drop off the face of the planet.
It's hard
so,
to.
So, yeah, you just drop them a quick yeah. line. Like, if he was going through something bad, he could have just dropped you a quick line being like, hey, can't talk for a bit.
Yeah, but
we'll
then he started
soon.
Posting some weird inspirational message on Facebook.
Yeah, those are the most adult memes I've ever seen from a big baby.
Like, yeah, and I was like, okay.
Those are very, like,
first of all,
yeah.
I don't want a guy who does inspirational quotes
on
and
Facebook.
There were already some warning signs about that.
Well, I think it's not bad. Inspirational
no,
quotes can be
bad.
Nice.
Bad. Don't do it. No.
Well, no, it can be good, but like this is one step removed
don't
from
be
minion
preachy,
memes.
Though. He was preachy about it in our texts.
Yeah, see, I didn't
like,
see
like I told
that.
Him I was volunteering and he's like, that's good. Volunteering makes the heart strong.
I mean, that's a very generic inspirational quote. And like,
but it
how
was
strong
all stuff
will
like
protect
that.
Me from like high cholesterol. Like, I want to know what the strength of volunteering.
I don't So that the actual drama did not have to do with Gaston.
Yeah, that was just an update. But you've got some other interesting drama. And I was here to experience a lot of that, like, peripherally. Yeah. But I didn't hear this part. Yeah. I didn't hear about this part until later.
So I have an ex. And I'm going to call just one. Him. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, just one.
Just the
I'm
one
a
ex.
Saint.
Yeah, no. She's very pure and chaste.
Yeah. Chaste. It's chaste.
Fuck, yes, I got it. Okay.
Yeah, so we'll just call him Forehead. As you can imagine, he had a big forehead.
I mean, objectively speaking, yeah. He would be considered very, like, traditionally handsome, I guess?
Foreheady.
Yeah, traditionally foreheady. I don't know. He was a Chad. Yeah, Andrea, that's like incel terminology, just so you know. Yeah, that's
what is
Chad. Chad is like the word that incels use for hot guys who get all the girls. There's really funny diagram. Yeah, but they talk about bone structure a lot. It always comes down to bones. I don't know, but like they talk about like millimeters of bone separating the Chads from the non-Chads, and having a protuberant masculine forehead. Is a thing,
but
that
his wasn't protuberant.
No,
it
was just kind of long.
Really high.
Yeah, it kind of just
really
went.
High forehead.
It went on.
Like his face was halfway down his head, all smooshed at the bottom. And yeah, then the rest is all forehead.
Yeah, but the little part that had face was a Chad part.
Yeah.
Of the
No, he was handsome.
He was traditionally handsome, but yeah. Forehead is his name.
But so with the forehead, he used to. Try to gaslight me when I drank. So this is sort of related to your drinking story in that
luckily,
there's alcohol involved.
Yeah, that's the only relation. Like, unnamed was actually good to me.
yeah, unnamed was good to you.
Forehead,
so
not so much.
So when I used to get, like, blackout drunk, basically Forehead would embellish these stories to tell me what I had done. But he would embellish it so much, like, it would make me think that I had been, like, absolutely fucking crazy, that I had done a bunch of terrible shit. And it wasn't actually until after we'd broken up that I found out that these stories were embellished. So he was essentially gaslighting me into thinking that I
was
crazy, lunatic, drunk. And, yeah, I shouldn't have been drinking that much.
No, but you don't make something out to be really bad in order to manipulate someone into stopping. Like, A, that doesn't work. For most people who are, like, drinking due to, like, mental illness or stress in life or something, like, making them feel worse about themselves. Yeah,
just make you drink more.
Yeah, that's how it always
is. So I can forget what I did the last time I drank.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's how I did it.
So he, I guess, like, I was kind of suspicious anyway because I was like, well, this is weird. Before I started dating you and I got blackout drunk, I didn't do all these crazy things.
Yeah, weird how that
works. And suddenly I turn into a lunatic who turns psychotic every time I drink now that I'm dating you.
Yeah, so, weird. So, like, and like that can happen. Sometimes you can drink for a long spot of time, then suddenly snap. But
that's not what happened.
It's not that common.
I found out after from people that
that was
like I would be like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, I did that and that and that, and they're like. No, you were fine.
Yeah.
You just, like, it reminds me of the book The Girl on the Train. I won't say anything more about it because I don't want to spoil it. But anybody who's read it could
totally.
Yes, you should read it. I'll tell you about it after.
Okay.
And everybody else who hasn't read it should read it. But yeah, so it just reminds me of that book. But basically, the forehead took a video once because he wanted to prove to me how awful I was when I was drunk.
Oh, yeah.
But basically, all I was doing was laying down on the floor moaning. Probably
horrible.
Because I felt nauseous.
Yeah, and that's fair.
And, and that's all he'd get because, of course, the stories that he was telling me weren't true.
What kind of things did he say you did? Like, what did he say you did?
He just say, like, I was being an asshole, basically, to, like, if there were other people around, if it wasn't just at home.
Yeah.
He would say I had been, like, kind of an asshole and saying dumb things and ridiculous things to people.
Oh, like, being embarrassing or whatever.
Really embarrassing things. I don't, like, nothing specific, but,
yeah,
like.
Yeah, well, he probably couldn't come up with something
being
specific.
Being too lovey-dovey, like, embarrassingly lovey-dovey, or being too, like, angry.
Yeah.
Being, like, really angry.
Yeah, and you know, like, from what I can see of you when you're drunk, you can go, you can get affectionate, or, and you can get, like, snippy, but your snippiness lasts for, like, half a moment, and then it's gone, and it's not actually anger.
Mm-hmm.
It comes across more as being, like, sassy, and, like, at worst.
Sassy.
Yeah, saucy mix. Yeah, it comes across more that way. It's not, like, you don't, like, throw shit or get mean or say awful things to people.
Speaking at least of which, I should open my beer.
Yep. Yeah, good cue. We're both holding a beer. I'm at the low amount of 3 normal.
I sprayed you.
That's okay. I'm used to it. I'm actually used to having beer all over my clothes. It's fine. I often miss my mouth. And that's, yeah, and that's not even.
That's helping. That's the cut down plan.
Yeah, that's helping. No, it's like, and that's not even a result of like being drunk, because I'm never drunk anymore, and I haven't been for, oh, geez, months and months and months now, because I cut down from, like, 12 beer, and sometimes it was the strong type, to these little, these normal 5% cans, and I'm down to 3 of those a day, which is the lowest I've been in terms of drinking.
In years.
Basically, over 2 years at least, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. Shit. Huh.
Yeah.
I'm pretty glad.
So that's my story.
Yeah.
Gaslighting.
Yeah.
Don't gaslight people, okay?
Yeah, and what gaslighting is, it's an abuse tactic where you try to basically, and this is a pattern of behavior, so if someone does this to you once because they have misinformation or they don't remember something correctly, that's probably not an abuse tactic, just ask them about it. But basically, it's when people tell you you did things or didn't do things or something happened differently than how you remember it happening, and they make a habit of doing this.
And
so,
they tell you shit happened when they know that you won't remember, so that they can get away with telling you this shit and make you feel bad. The thing is I was actually starting to get suspicious while we were still together, even before I talked to these people, because there were nights that he thought I was blackout and I wasn't.
Yeah, so you'd remember.
I was just quite tipsy. So.
Oh, and he'd tell you did something?
And he would tell me. So I already knew he was embellishing, but I didn't know the extent to which he was.
Because on blackout nights, you never know, right? But on nights when you're tipsy and you do remember, and he was trying to pass it off because he thought you were drunk enough to forget.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you could tell. Yeah. Basically, when people, like, do that and it's a pattern of behavior, it's named after, I think it's a play where this guy drives his wife crazy by, like, lighting the lamp and telling her that she forgot to, like, gas lamp. Yeah.
I think it's actually called gas lamp.
Yeah, it might be. But, like, he lights the thing and tells her that she forgot to turn it off. And he does this over and over, or in the reverse, I forget. But he tells her this over and over and over again until she starts questioning her own, like, sanity, her own, basically her own memory. Like, she starts questioning herself and whether her interpretation of events is, like, real or not. And that's what gaslighting does. That's what gaslighters do. If it's a pattern of behavior, especially, then they can get you to question all the ways you perceive your relationship to them and the world and to other people. Like, you start to not trust that your version of events is true.
Yeah.
So they can get away with more
ironically,
shit.
Ironically, the forehead and I went to see the play Gas Lamp.
Did you really?
We
you
did.
Saw it?
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Maybe that was his inspiration.
I didn't even know that was a thing that, like, was still. So you've seen that part then, hey?
I have, yeah.
Oh,
and it was like a whole, as far as I remember, it was like a whole family trying to gaslight
this one woman.
It was mostly the husband wanting to do it, I think, but the whole family stood to gain because if she got
committed.
Yeah, if she got, like, committed, then they would all inherit
shit
from
God.
Her. So,
so these are good people.
This is from what I remember. I could be wrong, but that's what I remember the play being.
That makes sense, though. I figured they're, because there usually is a motive for real-life abusers who gaslight as, a main tactic of theirs, too. Usually the motive is, if you can get someone to, like, really question their own, like, perceptions, then you can basically get away with a lot more. Like, an abuser could get away with doing something nasty to you, and then you ask them about it, like, maybe a day or so later, and they'd be like, no, that never happened. And if you've been gaslit over and over and you question yourself, you're more likely to just, like, shut up and take it, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's
just an
example.
You'll eventually start believing that you're crazy.
Yeah, or that you're stupid, or that you're something, you know? Like,
yeah.
That your word's not as good as theirs.
Especially if they are, like, they can say these things with real conviction.
Yeah, and some people can. A lot of abusers
are convincing.
And they
can make it believable enough, right? Because
yeah, no,
people do act ridiculously a lot when they're blackout. So it was believable
for, in your case, with the drunkenness, it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's like, it's hard enough for people when they're sober and this being done to them, but like if you've been blackout and people have said this shit. That's why I always like insist whenever I've gotten blackout in the past, I've insisted on asking people, you know, what did I do? What did I say? And if they could give me any specifics that they remembered.
Same.
Because it's really helpful. But I've had friends who avoided it.
Yeah, I had friends who avoided it too.
I know, and that's...
There are those people that too that just worse. Won't tell you anything.
I know, it drives me nuts. Like, I think in their case, they were trying to be kind or they just didn't want to talk about it because it had upset them. But, like, I kind of needed to know, you know?
Yeah.
And I needed, like, someone I trusted to just tell me the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
So when someone takes advantage of that the way Forehead did and, like, doesn't tell the truth, know. Tells you all these things that are not the truth...
Yeah, then it's really, yeah, it's abusive. It was a pattern of abuse, just didn't it's notice nasty. It.
No, it'd be hard to.
Yeah,
so our main stories today on that, on that like, upper
on
note.
On that
there.
Note.
Yeah, on that super on positive, that cheerful. Note. Yeah, but this is something for you guys to watch out for, so keep that in mind. Another thing that you actually don't have to watch out for, unless you're an orca trainer, is incidents with wild orcas. Yeah, ooh. A less common abuse tactic.
My orca story today is I did a bunch of research on wild and captive orcas.
Mainly the attacks, yeah.
I focus on the three deaths that are pretty famous by this one orca named Tilikum. But we're going to go through just a little bit of the incidents with wild orcas. I'm just going to go through this. So... Shut up.
It's okay. We're both really good at doing this right now. We're both such good podcasters.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. No.
Okay. So, incidents with wild orcas. In the early 1910s, the Terra Nova expedition recorded that killer whales had attempted to tip ice floes on which an expedition photographer and a sled dog team were standing.
Wow.
Pretty mild, right?
Oh, yeah. I think this was the 1910s.
They had noticed that killer whales had tried to do that, trying to get at...
trying to get at the people on
trying
the...
To get at, no, like trying to get seals. At seals.
Yeah, on like,
so
ice.
So they noticed that the killer whales were having the same behavior, but with people and dogs.
And they probably didn't even know
They probably
know
didn't
it
even know it was people on there. They're probably flipping it, hoping they'd get a sea
nice,
lion.
Nice, juicy seal or sea lion.
Yeah.
Or...
In the 1970s, that was the one with the Californian surfer Hans Kretschmer. He reported being bitten by an orca at Point Sur?
Point Sur? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Point Sur. That's it. That's what that looks like to me, but it's probably like Point Sur.
Yeah, probably the way like most people would pronounce it.
Yeah, if it's not actually that, yeah.
His wound required 100 stitches. So what happened to him was something nudged him from behind. He thought it was one of his surfing companions. And then it bit his leg. So he knew then it wasn't one of his surf companions.
Well, it might have been.
Maybe.
It was Greg.
Depends on... Greg,
stop
that.
Stop doing that. Yeah, no.
Not again.
Whenever this joke is made in some capacity, the guy's name is always Greg.
Or Gary.
Yeah, yeah.
Always a G.
Yeah.
Gary.
I think it, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. That's because they're notorious leg biters. Yeah.
So he tried to fend it off by punching it, and he lost his surfboard, and it didn't, well, I mean, it didn't let go because of his punches, but it did suddenly let go.
Yeah, just probably figured it out.
For no reason. Basically, like, ew, this is human.
Also, this porpoise is hitting me.
Disgusting.
Yeah, exactly. This isn't a delicious tasty.
Hans was not a delicious porpoise. He was a person.
No, like... Yeah, if you've ever compared, like, porpoise meat to human meat, which I'm sure you have.
I'm sure most people have.
Yeah, no, this is a relatable one. Porpoise is superior.
Insulting.
Yeah, by far. Yeah.
Assume that.
Yeah, to assume that no one's cultured enough to have delighted in the porpoise and the human flesh. The long pig. Yeah.
So,
but yeah, so
Hans,
he got bitten, but
he got bitten.
He lived, right?
And then the orca let go. And then he went to the shore. He was safe. And
okay, good.
And when he went to get his stitches, the doctor said it looked like someone had chopped his leg with a sharp axe.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was like clean bite.
Oh, shit. So did the orca bite it off? Like
no.
Oh, just bit it.
He had
100
stitches, but it still had his leg.
Attached, yeah.
Yeah. And
somehow.
So sometimes orcas will play with divers, carefully biting them in the flippers, but this is the only time a human was ever wounded by a wild orca.
Aw, so they're usually kind of delicate.
They could have been playing, because they do get playful with humans.
Yeah, and they don't realize that they are,
like, took it too far. Or what's probably, I think, is more likely is that he was hungry and thought he was a porpoise.
Yeah, it could be
especially
one or the
with
other,
the surfboard. Surfers look like porpoises.
Yeah, because
from the
you've got the flippers and that oblong shape. Yeah, you're oblong. They can't see your arms. No. And they can't. They were just seeing the flippers and the shape. Yeah.
A poor orca. He's probably like.
Poor Hans too.
He's probably like getting a bite of rancid butter.
Oh.
He's probably like, ew, ah.
This isn't porpoise. This isn't delicious.
Take some whale mouthwash.
Yeah. Whale scope.
Disgusting.
Yeah. Whale Listerine.
We're probably saltier.
You know what? I've been told that,
that we're
been
quite
told.
Salty?
No, you know what? I licked someone once and they were pretty salty.
Well, that's the outside.
Yeah, I haven't actually eaten human flesh, but I've heard it's like pork. I haven't heard this direct from someone's mouth, though. Like, this is something that's, like, known to people is why
your
we're called
Your friend Hannibal?
Pig. Yeah, my
like,
buddy.
Yeah,
no,
like,
Mads Mikkelsen himself, actually. He's a method actor. He lives the
Mads.
Life.
It's not. What is it?
Isn't
it's,
it?
No, he likes that people call him Mads because it's how it's spelled, because he thinks it sounds cool, but it's actually pronounced, like, Maj or something.
Maj?
I don't remember. Don't quote me. I'm pretty sure it's not Maj, but it's something.
Something like actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like it would be more logically linguistic to what the. Yeah. My good friend. Yeah. Like I said, he's a method actor. He's eaten some flesh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, when you go to the method and you have
it.
To murder and eat somebody just so that you can really be believable when you play it in front of the screen.
Yeah, no, that's what I do. Well, if you're going to do that, pick the one where you're not a cannibal.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Pick the one where you're, like, a volunteer at a soup kitchen or, like, a billionaire who decides to give away all their billions.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
To podcast people.
To podcast people. Yes, to the needy. Yeah, no.
Okay, so in the 2000s, while swimming in 4 feet of water in Alaska, a 12-year-old boy named Ellis Miller was bumped in the shoulder.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah. See, that's the thing. Orcas don't usually go as far as biting. They usually will start.
Yeah, they're bumping.
And then they realize
that you're not.
Like, way before the biting occurs, that you're not what they think you are. And you're not food.
That's common to a lot of, like, animals along those lines, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, orcas are a type of porpoise, aren't they? Like, a very large.
They're dolphins.
They're dolphins. That's why I keep mixing them up with. Yeah, because I know they eat porpoises. But,
that's because they've been called
they're
sharks
a large dolphin.
And whales.
Yeah, people either think they're a whale or they think they're a shark.
The shark one is a common one.
They're actually a type of mean dolphin.
Yeah.
But, I mean, a really cool, like, mean dolphin.
Okay, so in the 2010, a kid got bumped. That's it.
I'm glad he's okay. Like, a bite on a child would not go so well.
No. In the 2010s... they were filming a BBC documentary called Frozen Planet, and a group of orcas were filmed trying to swamp the film crew's 18-foot Zodiac boat.
Hey.
Not book. Tip them as they were filming.
Shit.
But otherwise, they were described as being very tolerant of the filmmaker's presence. On February 10th, 2014, a free diver in Hora Hora Estuary.
Ew.
In New Zealand, was pulled down for over 40 seconds by a killer whale that grabbed a bag containing crayfish and urchins, which was attached to his arm by a rope.
What?
And then the rope eventually came free, and then he undid his weight belt and returned to the surface.
It is kind of
weird. That's it. So
he was okay.
The orca was just trying to get his fish. And it just happened to be tied to his arm.
Oh, that's kind of adorable.
Yeah.
In a way, like, the orca's just like,
in a dangerous way. And that's it.
That's my favorite.
I mean, there's like a couple more like small ones, but that's it for like the wild orca.
Yeah, that's it for wild orcas.
Quote unquote attacks.
Yeah.
That's wild. That was all wild.
Yeah.
Okay, so on to the captive orca.
These are the messy ones, yeah.
There are a million. I'm not going to say them all because there are a million.
But you got the good ones in
here. We don't have time to go through
the more interesting ones. Yeah, there are a million.
And I have a cold.
Oh.
That's why I'm clearing my throat so much.
Yeah. It's okay. We do that anyway.
That's that sexy.
It's better
sound
than like
hear.
500 ums or butt ums, butts that I do.
Every time I want to say I'll just go.
Yep.
Okay, so here's one. On April 20th, 1971, SeaWorld Secretary Annette Eckes was talked into riding the park's main attraction, a 10-year-old female orca named Shamu, at the park in San Diego, California, as a publicity stunt. As the ride was coming to an end, Eckes was suddenly thrown off the whale's back. The orca grabbed her by her leg and began pushing her through the water.
Ooh.
Trainers on the side of the tank grabbed her and tried to pull her out, but the whale again grabbed her leg and wouldn't let go.
Shit.
Shamu's jaws had to be pried apart with a pole to free her.
Oh.
She was carried away on a stretcher and needed 200 stitches to close the wounds
she suffered. Yeah.
And then at Marine World, okay.
Whoa, wait. So the first girl.
Yeah, that's
girl,
the end of that
first
story.
Girl. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That's it. She was
so
fine.
So of course it happened at SeaWorld.
I mean, not fine.
No,
she wasn't
but
great.
She didn't die.
She was alive.
These attacks have been so much more brutal than in the wild. Like, and these
oh, yeah.
are trained orcas.
Well, that will become clear as I work my way through the thousands of stories I have typed out here.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, SeaWorld. Yeah. You're providing us with a lot
it's
of
not
material.
Just SeaWorld.
Now
there's
Marine
also
Land,
Marine
too.
Land.
Yeah, anywhere
and
that
Marine
does that
World.
Shit. Oh, God.
Yeah, there's lots.
Their illicit love child.
So at Marine World...
Yeah.
I think.
Same park, also in the early 70s.
No. You're just reading off my paper. You don't understand.
I gotta know.
This is the same park as that one, but I'm not reading it.
I've heard about this stuff,
okay.
But I like to hear about it over and over.
Also in the early 70s at Marine World, an unidentified Marine World trainer was seized by the young male Orky 2 and held at the bottom of the tank until he nearly lost consciousness.
Oh.
Yeah.
Unidentified?
Yeah, they don't know who the trainer is. Also in the early 70s, during a waterworks session, Hugo it was the orca's name. He refused to allow his trainer, Chip Kirk, to get out of the water and then hit him badly enough to leave a scar.
What?
A second thing Hugo did in the early 70s, he grabbed trainer Bob Pulaski by the wetsuit and began thrashing him.
Ooh.
Pulaski struggled, but it only made things worse. Hugo's tank mate Lolita then joined in and began a tug of war with Hugo. Pulaski freed himself from the tangled wetsuit and got to safety, and there were no injuries mentioned in this.
I would think there'd be some, though. They're lucky, like... You know,
he might
he's
have just
lucky
been
he didn't
thrown
get
around
torn
a bit
apart.
In
yeah.
the water, though.
Yeah, with the tug of war, though, like it's there. He's yeah. It's a good thing they didn't like draw and quarter him, actually. Like.
And it didn't. They didn't bite him, apparently.
No. So they were just
bit
playing,
his wetsuit.
But yeah.
Yeah. On so May 2nd, 1978.
The '70s.
This is all the 70s, this
yeah.
whole section.
Holy shit.
Yeah. On May 2nd, 1978, a Marineland of the Pacific trainer. It's called Marineland of the Pacific.
Oh, okay.
So, the Marineland of the Pacific, a trainer, 27-year-old Jill Stratton, was nearly drowned when the 10-year-old Orky II suddenly grabbed her and dragged her to the bottom of the tank, holding her there for nearly 4 minutes.
Mm.
So, still in the 70s.
Yep.
Trainer Chris Christensen, his parents loved him.
Yeah.
received 7 stitches in his cheek after young male orca Hugo closed his mouth on his head.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's it for the 70s.
He's lucky he wasn't beheaded.
I know.
All right.
Why did he have his head in his mouth? I don't know. In the 1980s. So on February 23rd, 1984, a 7-year-old female orca by the name of Candu the Fifth. grabbed a SeaWorld California trainer, Joanne Hay, and pinned her against a tank wall during a performance. Hay was only released after another trainer jammed a fist into the whale's blowhole.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Yikes.
I included that because of the blowhole.
Yeah, that's just a ridiculous image.
On March 4th, 1987, 20-year-old SeaWorld San Diego trainer Jonathan Smith was grabbed by one of the park's 6-ton killer whales.
John Smith, really?
Yeah. Right?
6-ton. Wow.
The orca dragged him to the bottom of the tank, then carried him bleeding all the way back to the surface and spat him out.
That was like a political statement on part of the orca.
Smith
Yikes.
Gallantly waved to the crowd when a second orca slammed into him.
Oh my goodness.
He continued to pretend he was unhurt as the whales repeatedly dragged him to the bottom of the stadium pool. He was cut all around his torso and had a ruptured kidney and a 6-inch laceration of his liver,
Ow.
Yet managed to escape with his life.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's a trooper.
He is.
I would quit. Fuck that.
On June 15th, 1987, A 29-year-old SeaWorld San Diego trainer, Joanne Weber, suffered a fractured neck when Candu the Fifth landed on top of her and pushed her to the bottom of the pool during a training session.
These people are just really fucking lucky.
I know. On November 21st, 1987, trainer John Sillick was riding on the back of a female orca when Orky II, a 5-ton male, jumped and landed on him. He had to have multiple surgeries because his back, hips, pelvis, ribs, and legs were severely fractured.
No kidding.
And this led to the firing of SeaWorld's president and three other employees. Good. And he had to learn to walk again.
Oh, not so good. Well, I'm glad he did walk again.
I know. So now we're into the one of the interesting...
So now we're into one of the deaths, unfortunately.
Death cases. Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Or fortunately, depending on your level of sadism, yeah.
Yay!
So Andrea's is high, so... Andrea's is a very high level, so yeah.
On February 20th, 1991, so Kelty Byrne, a 20-year-old marine biology student and part-time trainer at Sealand in BC, was attacked by a killer whale called Tilikum.
Right. Yeah.
Going into the background of Tilikum, you see that before Byrne was attacked, he was getting abused and was in captivity in Sealand for 8 years. Sealand claimed it was a freak accident, but eyewitness accounts contradict this.
Yeah.
Kelty was a part-time orca trainer there. After a show, she slipped and fell into the whale pool. Tilikum and his roommates Nootka and Haida dragged and brought Byrne down into the pool until she drowned. Other trainers tried distracting the whales, but they wouldn't give up. It took them 2 hours to recover her body from the killer whales. And then here's a quote. She tried to get back out, and the other girl tried to pull her up, but the whale grabbed her back foot and her back foot as opposed to her front foot. I don't know.
Yeah, what?
Okay. I don't know.
Whatever one was further back, I guess.
And pulled her under. And then the whales, they bounced her around the pool a whole bunch of times, and she was screaming for help.
Ooh.
They tried to grab her with sticks, but they couldn't get her, and she finally didn't come up anymore.
Oh.
Yeah, said one eyewitness.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's not an accident.
There's more to this. So possible causes of the attack included unfamiliarity with the trainer and the relationship between the whales. Coroner's report states that Byrne's main cause of death was drowning.
Oh, that's not a fun way to go, but yeah. I guess at least she didn't get, like, torn
apart. So here's some information on Tilikum. In November of 1983, Tilikum was only 2 years old when he was captured and brought to Sealand. His tank at Sealand was 100 by 50 feet and was only 35 feet deep.
Holy
and he
shit.
Weighed 12,500 pounds and measured 22 feet in length. And he shared this cell with two female killer whales named Haida and Nootka. And both of these whales were abusive toward him.
Oh, great.
And he struggled with performing some of the tricks.
Yeah.
So this would make the trainers not give Tilikum, Haida, and Nootka food.
Oh.
And this was the reason that the females assholes. Would abuse Tilikum. Because they realized, like, he was the reason that they weren't getting food.
Oh.
Because he wasn't succeeding in his tricks.
That's disgusting.
So he became stressed out, having to perform every hour 8 times a day for 7 days a week. And it gave him stomach ulcers. And this stress and the solitary.
The stress and solitary confinement, I guess? Yeah, being
like,
alone.
Yeah. He wasn't friends with either of the other two whales, right?
Yeah, so he had no socialization.
So his stress and being alone were other possible causes to the attack.
Yeah.
After Byrne was killed, Sealand closed and put Tilikum up for sale.
What?
And they released a statement about the death, which was contrary to the statement given by eyewitnesses.
Of course it was.
So this is what they said. She had 10 tooth marks on her body, the largest on her left thigh, but was otherwise untouched. The whales had stripped her clothes off. It was just a tragic accident, the manager said.
Of course.
I just cannot explain it.
Yeah, it's inexplicable, guys.
Yeah. It's
how?
Fucking mystery.
Yeah. What?
So she was a champion swimmer who had competed at the international level, but she was no match for three huge orcas determined to keep her in the pool.
No, they're like thousands of pounds, 12,000 pounds.
Yeah. At one point, she reached the side and tried to climb out. But as horrified visitors watched from the sidelines, the whales pulled her screaming back into the pool. I just heard her scream my name, said trainer Karen McGee. And then I saw she was in the pool with the whales. I threw the life ring out to her. She was trying to grab the ring, but the whale basically wouldn't let her.
Yeah.
To them, it was a play session, and she was in the water.
I mean, yeah. Yes and no.
Yeah.
Like, that's it was kind of like, debatable.
I don't know. A very aggressive play session.
Yeah, like, this doesn't happen as often in the wild when orcas get playful. Like, I could see them trying to play with the trainer and hurting them because they don't know how breakable we are. Like, other orcas, they can bump harder.
I think
and
they have a basic understanding of what they were doing, though.
I think so, because it lasted for a while, and she tried to get away, and they pulled her back in. Like, yeah. Like, orcas are pretty intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
They're a dolphin.
The other staff tried to distract the whales by throwing them fish, hanging on the water, or banging on the water with steel buckets, and giving them hand and voice commands, but nothing succeeded. Mm. She came up screaming one more time.
Oh.
And then as the whale swam round and round the pool with burn in its mouth, she finally drowned.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, this
and then 2 hours, you know, after she died was pretty much when they could actually get the body. So, like, they can even get the whales away from her when she was dead.
Wow. I feel so bad for her. Like, I don't think the trainers are particularly moral themselves, but oftentimes they don't know just how immoral this whole thing is.
I think they try to be as compassionate as they can with the whales.
Yeah, and back then, a lot of them would know.
But they can't fix the situation that is already bad, which is that they're being kept in captivity in pools that are too small.
Yeah, they could take a stand by
them by
quitting.
Not feeding them.
Yeah, I think it's finally just something's been done about it around like 2015. But
yeah. And then the second death. So on the morning of July 6, 1999, a 27-year-old man named Daniel Dukes was found deceased and naked, draped across Tillicum's back.
Wow.
Whale shows heavily emphasize the human-whale connection, which might be why he got into the water.
Yeah.
Like, because it kind of looked like he voluntarily just jumped in with the orcas, right?
Yeah, I heard about this
one. But that's because you think they're friendly.
Yeah, well, yeah, you do. I mean, they are portrayed that way. Like, a lot of people would jump into dolphin tanks and shit, too, not knowing.
So, Tillicum had avulsed Duke's pubic area.
What?
Yeah.
What? What does that mean?
Like, chomped it.
Oh, avulsed.
His, his scrotum was, like, torn open or something.
Oh, that makes mine shrivel up in despair. A little bit. Ow.
Yeah. He was covered in bruises, abrasions, and bite marks. Three separate pieces of human tissue were found in the western part of the pool.
Oh, no. I wonder why the pubic area.
So with that one,
they
really tried to make it seem like, because he was kind of a drifter kind of guy.
So they probably, like,
they tried to make it seem like he was, like, drunk or high or crazy when he got in.
Yeah.
Which, whatever.
It could have been, it could not have been, but
they made him sound like kind of a bad guy. But then there are also accounts that he actually was, like, really heavily involved in helping to feed the poor.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Like, was even though he was a drifter and, like,
mm-hmm.
he might have been homeless.
It doesn't.
He helped other homeless people. Like,
yeah,
he was actually
a good person.
Yeah, he was, like, a good person. But they tried to make it sound like
he was. Of course they did. Because they want to, like, shift publicity blame onto anyone but themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's
so
repulsive.
Here's another big one, but this one is not a death. So this is the 2000s.
Yeah, finally. We're
so,
in the,
July 8th, 2002, Tamari Tollison, a 28-year-old trainer, was hospitalized for a compound fracture of her forearm as well as several lesser injuries after an incident occurred in Shamu Stadium at SeaWorld San Diego.
San Diego, get, come
tiska,
on.
Tiska. She was working poolside with two of the park's orcas, Orchid and Splash. She was, here's a quote. She was playing with the whales, talking to them. The next thing we know, as it appears from the video, she was pulled into the water, said the spokesperson. The visitor video shows that the trainer was pulled in by her foot after the female Orchid grabbed it during the session. Both Orchid and Splash continually pulled the trainer under as she screamed for help.
Oh, no.
A fellow trainer made the decision to take the chain off the gate of an adjoining pool to imply that Kasatka, a more dominant female, was coming in. And after that, Orchid, who was holding Tamari at the time, then let the trainer go and she was able to escape.
Smart.
Yeah. Park officials stated that the trainer exited the pool without assistance and was taken to a local hospital where a pin was needed to reset her fractured arm.
She's lucky the coworker there, like, knew some shit.
Yeah.
Gosh.
There's a lot I didn't highlight here because there's just so many.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit happens with captive orcas.
Well, that's the thing. Like, there are a lot of incidents here where it's just like them being aggressive or just like more minor attacks mm-hmm. that I'm not going into.
Yeah.
Because this would be a two-parter. In late July 2004, during a show at the SeaWorld Park in San Antonio, Texas, a male orca named Kai repeatedly jumped on top of his trainer, Steve Abel, forcing him underwater and barred him from escaping the water. After several minutes, he was able to calm the animal and he exited the pool unhurt. In quotes, veterinarians believe the whale felt threatened by the trainer, perhaps as a result of the effects of adolescent hormones.
Yeah, see, again, don't keep them in captivity.
Yeah.
They're not built for it. Like, most animals aren't, but especially an animal that you're keeping in, like, the equivalent of a shoebox.
Okay, so there's another one. On November 29th, 2006, Kasatka, one of SeaWorld San Diego's seven orcas, grabbed Ken Peters by the foot and dragged him to the bottom of the tank several times during an evening show at Shamu Stadium. Ooh. He escaped after 9 minutes when Kasatka released him. The whale then followed him, proceeding over a netted barrier toward him.
Oh.
This is the second documented incident of Kasatka attacking Peters, like this guy.
Yeah, like, attacked twice. Poor guy. Yeah. Like, seriously, really, like... Like, how many of your employees have to die before you stop pulling this shit?
I know.
Like, they might as well just feed them to the orcas at this point. That's kind of what they're doing.
I know.
Like, job description is you might die because I'm about to push you in. Yeah.
Just be really good bait.
Yep.
And we're saying no more.
It's a good show.
Please apply.
Yep. Yep.
Excellent health benefits.
Yeah.
We can afford it.
We'll cover
anything. Because we only need to cover you for about a month.
Yeah.
And then you'll be dead.
Yeah. Yeah, no, seriously. That's what it's seeming like.
Just like they 100% obviously... coverage because they only have to pay for each employee for a few weeks or so until they are eaten.
Yeah, exactly. No, they can cover anything because they know they're not going to have to pay it out ultimately anyway.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, this kind of shows, you know, people who don't give a shit about animals often don't give a shit about people either.
No.
They don't care about non-human animals.
They keep capturing orcas and keeping them in pools that are too small, and they keep putting trainers in situations where orcas are pissy.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, hey, that orca's grumpy. Anyway, get in there and train.
So we tortured the orca, got them good and mad after torturing them for 8 years. So why don't you get on in there and touch them?
So I also read, so in the case of an orca attack or like when an orca's getting aggressive, instead of ending the show, trainers are to try every other method before ending a show.
Yeah.
So like distraction, but you stay in there and you keep doing that show.
Three cheers for late capitalism.
They get mad at the trainers for ending the shows after being like nearly drowned.
That's ridiculous. I know. Fucking hate that. This is just a paycheck.
And I'm not sure which company that was.
They're all the same anyway.
Yeah.
Like SeaWorld is the one that people rail about the most, but they're all bad.
So here's another death. It's not one of the three famous ones.
Okay, so I probably haven't heard of it.
Probably because this happened in Spain.
Okay.
And it wasn't by Tilikum, so.
Yeah, Tilikum is known for this.
He's like the famous one. Yeah. So on December 24th, 2009, 29-year-old Alexis Martinez died during a rehearsal for a Christmas Day show at Loro Park in Spain. Hmm. Probably Loro Parque or something. I don't know.
Something prettier. Yeah. Than how we're pronouncing it.
Than how I'm saying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The 14-year-old male orca, Quito, who was born at SeaWorld Orlando, Florida, rammed Martinez in the chest, rendering him unconscious. Martinez drowned before he could be rescued.
Ouch.
The park repeatedly asserted that this was not an attack, but an unfortunate accident caused by roughhousing.
Okay.
However, they also did describe Quito as not being completely predictable.
No kidding. You don't say.
And the subsequent autopsy report revealed that Alexis died due to the serious injuries he sustained from the attack, including multiple compression fractures and tears to his vital organs and bite marks all over his body.
Wow. This is all really sad. These poor orcas and these poor people and
it's
like
horrible.
Everyone involved. Yeah. Like...
Horrible for our horror show. On February 24th, 2010, Don Bronchot performed a Dine with Shamu show with Tilikum, the largest orca at SeaWorld Orlando. Mm-hmm. Tilikum.
Yeah.
So you know what's coming. In this setting, guests ate at an open-air restaurant while watching the performance poolside as the orca was exercised and fed.
Oh, good. They're feeding them now. Yeah. It only took till 2010.
Jesus.
Good job, guys.
As part of the end of show routine, she was at the edge of the pool, rubbing Talikum's head. Mm-hmm. She was lying with her face next to his on a slide out, which is a platform submerged about a foot into the water.
Yeah.
Sources stated that she was pulled into the water by her ponytail. Ooh. Some say her arm. So
it's hard to say.
Yeah. The orca's move seems to have been very quick, pulling her underwater and drowning her. At least a dozen patrons witnessed Dawn in the water with Talikum. Employees used nets and threw food at Talikum in an attempt to distract him. Moving from pool to pool in the complex, they eventually directed Talikum to a smaller medical pool where it would be easier to calm him. And then he released her body.
Great.
The autopsy report said she died from drowning and blunt force trauma. Her spinal cord was severed. She had sustained fractures to her jawbone, ribs, and cervical vertebra.
So she would have been, like, paralyzed.
Her scalp was completely torn from her head. Her left arm had been ripped off near the shoulder. And her left elbow and left knee had been dislocated.
So even if she'd survived this, like, she would have, like, had to go through a lot of nasty medical shit.
And what's horrible is that you don't know when she, at which point she died. So
yeah, exactly.
She could have been alive for all the fractures
and the tearing.
And tearing of her scalp and arm being torn off.
I'm hoping not.
Because apparently she died from drowning.
She did.
And blunt force trauma.
Yeah.
But who knows what point,
Yeah,
right?
Like, hopefully, I mean, I hate to say this, but, like, hopefully it was after the spine was severed that this other stuff happened.
Hopefully the spinal cord was severed first.
Yeah,
or
because
she drowned before all the rest of it.
Yeah, which is hard to say, but I kind of doubt it. Although with the severed spinal cord, she probably didn't feel much before she drowned, yeah. And
here's
I'm glad
people
witnessed it. Do it with animals that are, like, feasible to
do
it with.
Yeah, why don't they do it, like...
Like, smaller...
I think it's West Edmonton Mall. I think they have one that has sea lion.
They do need more than people think, but not as much as a whale.
An orca,
yeah. Not as much as a... Like,
and yeah, maybe it's cool to be like, oh, hey,
our orcas.
We've got trained killer whales, like
this
huge
animal that we've
subjugated. Is dangerous. Yeah. We've trained it, but...
Yeah, people like that
whole idea.
You know,
I found the sea lion one delightful.
Yeah. I like going to aquariums and just seeing, like...
The fish.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's enough for me. I don't need someone
like
to ride
when,
an orca, like, to please me.
Stingray, or... I think it's when the stingrays swim over you.
Yeah,
and
you
see their little
gently...
faces on the bottom of their body.
Oh,
and their
cute faces.
And their butts. You see their butts.
Yeah.
That's not the best part.
I think it's an
adorable
part.
But it's so cute
part.
To see the little smile. And,
I know.
Because their mouths
look
like
they're
a smile.
Smiling. Yeah. Stingrays, like the little ones that you see, are really cute.
When I went to Maui, we went to the aquarium, and there's this part where you're walking through a tunnel, and the tank goes over the tunnel. So basically the tunnel is made out of fish tank, right?
Yes.
So you can see
there are some places like that.
The fish swimming over top of you.
Yeah.
There were like little hammerheads in there.
Yeah.
And that's when I saw the... stingray
there's
swim over me, and
oh,
then
and you saw his little face.
There are like there are different kinds of sharks, not just hammerheads, but hammerheads are the coolest, I think.
I think they're really neat. All right, so I also have a case.
No, you don't.
Well, I have something that my sister sent to me. Yeah, I have a thing.
I had a case, and I gave it to him.
Yeah, that was merciful. Next week I'm gonna do something different because I'm actually gonna focus on it. I'm gonna do my own little like essay review on something fictional. Yeah, on a fictional work of horror. Yep, I'm choosing what I'm gonna do it on, but I've got a good idea of it actually. Actually, yes. Now I know exactly what I'm gonna do. It came to me just now.
Yay!
There's a big smile on my face, and I feel very satisfied with myself.
Yeah, he's super satisfied.
Yeah, you can see the satisfaction.
Big cheesy grin. I can see every single one of his teeth.
It's like my stingray smile.
Don't bite.
Do stingrays bite?
No, but orcas do.
I mean, we've come to that conclusion. That's okay. I don't do as the orcas typically. Okay.
So you have to lean in awkwardly with your laptop on your
lap. Yeah. No, it's okay. This whole
setup
is
we
like
love
awkward.
This. We do not want new microphones.
Yeah,
this is what we want to do for the rest of.
That's reverse psychology subliminal messaging. We don't want microphone. Buy us microphones. Yeah. Okay. This is off the Wikipedia page. Thank you, Andrea. And
thank you, Wikipedia.
This is the death of Atsumi Yoshikuo. So unaccompanied, Yoshikubo arrived in Yellowknife from her home in the city of Uto on the southern Japanese island of Kyushu on October 17, 2014, a trip she had arranged through a tour operator in Toronto. She checked into the Explorer Hotel, the city's largest, for a week's stay. After doing so, she asked if she could book a seat on an Aurora tour and was told they had shut down for the season. October and November are off-peak times for Japanese tourism in Yellowknife, and the northern lights are not as visible as they are at other times of the year, and there's usually not enough snow cover for dog sledding, another popular activity of tourists. There is, however, enough to make walking on the trails through the boreal forest and bedrock outcrops in and around the city potentially dangerous for unprepared, unguided visitors, as she was.
Yeah,
the trails themselves become icy and swampy, and the snow makes it hard to distinguish them from the surrounding bush. So you could get lost on a trail, basically.
Yeah, you could wander off a trail.
Yeah, unless you had a guide. Yeah, so disappearance. Which she did not. No, Natsumi did not have a guide. So in the absence of an organized tour, the way 95% of Japanese visitors see Yellowknife, the rest generally come in groups, Yoshikubo apparently set her own itinerary, keeping to herself. So she just wanted to have a nice, peaceful time by herself, it sounds
like. I totally am.
Yeah, in your book, she had the right idea, but this could have led to some stuff. Security cameras at the Gallery of the Midnight Sun, a popular local gift and souvenir shop in the city's old town, recorded her visiting by herself and buying some items apparently meant as gifts for others on October 19th. At another time that day, cameras at the city's tourist information center recorded her visit, again alone. In both, she was wearing a pink coat and a darker pink hat with black pants and white shoes. All right, so
I like her taste.
Me too, actually. Pink. That's a lot of pink. Yeah, pink, I like that. Pink, pink. I would. Yeah, that sounds good to me. Yoshikubo's actions, her actions over the next 2 days from that are unknown. During the morning hours of October 22nd, the Explorer's security cameras recorded her leaving the building, wearing the same clothing she had been seen in the 2 days previous. Later, around 11:30 a.m., Jessica Riel, a retired constable with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, saw Yoshikubo walking along the Ingram Trail between Niven and Jackfish Lakes near the city's northern limits, a largely undeveloped area. She reported the sighting, the last time Yoshikubo is known to have been seen, several days later when the news of the Japanese woman's disappearance broke, although she was not completely confident as to the date, since she said she takes that route regularly.
Yeah.
Okay, so she was seen, she's not sure when exactly. Within a few days, yeah.
Yeah, she didn't know that she should say anything about it.
Yoshikubo never returned to her hotel, however. 3 days later, when the staff realized she had either left without checking out or overstayed her reservation, they entered her room. Inside, they found her luggage all packed. They reported her missing to the RCMP, who checked at Yellowknife's airport, where they learned she had not boarded her flight home either. All right, so the RCMP began an intense search effort, using both personnel on the ground and aerial assets to cover the expanses of Taiga North and west of the city near where Yoshikubo had last been seen, or could have reasonably expected to have walked to from her hotel. Residents, fearing that she had met foul play on the trails and motivated by concern for her distant family, joined in the search with their own informal efforts. The search was given extra urgency by the onset of colder, wintry weather. Yeah, it gets freezing up there.
Yeah,
it gets freezing down here. So it gets extra freezing up there.
We get minus 35 degree weather here.
Yeah, we get minus 35
Celsius. And that's degrees Celsius.
Yeah, it's Celsius. And up there, it's like minus 50 easily. All right, so the disappearance and search became a national news story, with 5 Japanese news outlets flying crews to Yellowknife to cover it for audiences in their country. There were concerns that the incident could result in less Japanese tourism in the city. Of the 60,000 Japanese people who had come to Yellowknife to see the Northern Lights since 2008, she was the first one ever to be reported missing. According to the country's consulate in Calgary. Calgary.
Yay.
Yeah, they can be trusted.
Shout out to Calgary.
Yeah.
Where we kind of are, ish.
I hate Calgary.
There's a good reason we're not fully
There's
in
a good
Calgary.
Reason we,
We moved to a small town outside of Calgary.
There's a good reason for it.
Calgary's poop.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
That's the reason.
On November 4th, however, the RCMP called off the search. Based on what they had found in Yoshikubo's hotel room and information developed by Japanese police investigating in Uto, they believed she had arrived in Yellowknife with a plan to go into the wilderness alone and become a missing person. What? They thought she was trying to be the missing person? However, they declined to give specifics as the case was still open and her body remained undiscovered. In Japan, Fuji Television reported that Yoshikawa's brother said he had been contacted by the country's Ministry of Foreign Affairs and told that his sister had sent a letter to a female friend before she left, suggesting she was planning to end her life in Canada. While her brother believed that the letter existed, he admitted he had not read it. He also doubted that his sister, who had been out of contact with him and their father for 10 years, truly intended to die in Yellowknife, pointing to the souvenirs she had been shown purchasing and her return ticket. Yeah.
See, that's weird, right?
Yeah, yeah. You
like, if she's actually planning
on doing just it,
committing suicide out there.
You wouldn't think you'd buy the souvenirs.
You wouldn't buy souvenirs.
Yeah, like, you might buy a return ticket so no one catches wise and gets worried as to what you're going to do.
Yeah.
But
souvenirs.
The souvenirs doesn't make sense.
That's like, yeah.
That's not necessary. Yeah, it's really not weird necessity.
Planning an excessive covering up.
Like, yeah, like, that doesn't make sense, yeah. So, for the aftermath, they're continuing to still search and conduct different investigations and follow leads they're getting, an RCMP spokeswoman told Northern News Services a week after the search was called off. It's just that the search and rescue is done. Just because that part is over doesn't mean we're giving up. Hmm. Searchers were concentrating on an area north.
They always say
that. Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what they all say as they give up. Yeah. But searchers were concentrating on an area north of the city using dogs and thermal imaging equipment to supplement their legwork. Many residents had been profoundly moved by the incident, whether they took part in the search or not. One resident had a condolence card set up for residents to sign at City Hall to be sent to Yoshikawa's family in Japan. I know there is a tremendous amount of local support for the search, and I think it's a way for Yellowknifers to let Atsumi's family in Japan know our thoughts are with her family. The city councilman, Dan Wong, who announced it at the council's November 10th meeting. This is another statement from Jessica Riel, the retired RCMP constable.
Mm-hmm.
This was who was apparently the last person known to have seen Yoshikubo. Here's the quote. As I drove past her, I thought it might not be the best idea for her being alone. She had considered turning around and going back to offer help, but decided against it. I thought, it was only 11:30 a.m., she'll be okay. She looked like she was sightseeing and it was close to zero, it wasn't freezing cold, and her pink coat was knee-length and she had on mitts and a hat. She was dressed for that temperature.
Yeah.
And, yeah, yikes. After learning several days later that the woman had been reported missing, Riel said, I just felt terrible. I didn't sleep much that night. We talked about it at work the next day and how important it is to listen to that little voice on your shoulder. I will always wonder what happened, or if I had stopped, if it would have made a difference in any way.
It might have.
Yeah, it might have.
Or she might have just been like, no, I'm fine, go move along, right? And then yeah. What are you supposed to do, like, stalk her?
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to say, although I would double check, because, I mean, worse comes to worse, someone tells you to fuck off. But, like,
but at that point,
it's still worth
that's
it.
That's the thing, like, she probably would have said fuck off, or, well, or
maybe.
Not, like, fuck off, but, you know,
something.
I'm fine, go away. Because at that point, she wasn't lost, she was by the road.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have made much of a difference, I don't think, because it wasn't obviously until later that she either got lost or committed suicide.
Yeah.
She probably wouldn't have been like, happened. Yeah, just come along with me, cop.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's hard to say. That's a good point, too. Like, it's hard. It's really difficult to say. Like, there's no point in blaming her, but I don't know. It's a good thing for me to take note of because sometimes, yeah, I'd rather be careful myself. So there was some speculation about why Yoshikubo might have chosen to die by walking into the bush around Yellowknife. Simon Hatcher, a professor of psychiatry at the University of Ottawa, said that most long wilderness sojourns are a form of temporary suicide. I've never known how to pronounce that until now. Thank you.
You're welcome.
From which people return feeling better. People who are suicidal can have this fantasy where they can have a temporary escape, a temporary suicide. He told the National Post, and maybe that way they will stand out and somebody will come along and save them. Mm-hmm. Maybe this was some form of this woman testing fate. Others wondered why, given popular locations in Japan such as Aokigahara Forest near Mount Fuji, yeah, that's suicide forest, mm-hmm. where there are many suicides each year due to the intense seclusion for that sort of wilderness suicide. Yoshikubo had traveled so far for hers.
She came all the way to Canada to do it.
Yeah, like that's what people are wondering. And maybe she really loved it, like, there, though. Some people, here's another quote. Some
maybe
people
just
romanticize.
Wanted to see. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Oh,
go ahead.
No, no worries. Yeah, no, there's another quote. Sometimes people romanticize about how they might control their death, and they can become fixated on a place, the director of a Toronto Suicide Prevention Center told the Post. So maybe this woman came to Canada to create some distance from her family and to spare them from it.
Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah.
But then why'd she buy them presents? Maybe she figured she'd buy them presents and then somebody could give them to the family after she was dead.
Yeah.
I guess that's one reasonable way of looking
at it. That's one way of thinking
about it. Eventually, her belongings would be returned to her family.
Yeah, maybe that's that could be it.
So that maybe that's not a good argument for why it wasn't suicide.
Maybe, yeah, and she might have, I mean, it could have been foul play, but she might have also been debating it. Like, maybe she was buying them gifts to almost talk herself out of it, and it didn't work. It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's possible that she
was torn. Yeah, it could have been a guilt thing, like, well, they won't get me back, but maybe this maple leaf wallet will help. Like, yeah. I don't know, like, when you're in that
this
state of mind.
This bottle of maple syrup will make it better.
Yeah, when you're in that state of mind, I've been in that state of mind, you do kind of think things like that in a way, like... Mm-hmm. If I do it, I'll make sure to hire a cleaning service for the same day so that, you know, my family doesn't have to clean any of it. Like, yeah. You know, you think silly things like that that don't make sense in context, but make sense in your very, very sad self.
Yeah.
So this last little bit, discovery of remains and identification. At the beginning of September 2015, the RCMP announced that a hiker in an area off the Ingraham, north of the city, had found personal effects that were confirmed to be Yoshikubo's. Along with the effects were human remains. However, the agency said it could take a month of forensic testing before it could be determined whether or not those remains were hers. In April 2016, the RCMP confirmed they were and announced that the case was closed. Since only bone fragments were left, they would not be able to perform an autopsy. Great.
Yeah.
So I guess so they'll never know.
But at least they found her, but they don't know why she...
They don't know how she died, yeah.
Like, if it was on purpose or if she just got off the trail.
Or what caused it, because, they can't do an autopsy.
Yeah.
So you can't assume exposure, which means you can't assume suicide you can sweep the entire area with as many search teams as you want, but it's no guarantee that the body won't have been dragged off by, animals or eaten.
Well, and in this case, it's so decomposed, it's bone. It's just bone.
Yeah, by the time you find them, if you're lucky enough to find them... But there might not be enough left to do anything about.
To figure anything out, yeah.
Yeah, to figure it out. So it's hard to say if this was foul play or not. So that's that case, yeah. I get being attached to a certain place, right?
Yeah.
So that's that disappearance.
Let's end on a jolly note.
Yeah, let's try to do that for sure.
Let's say something jolly.
Jolly, yeah. Well, there is something jolly behind our little recording studio mess of my closet here.
Oh,
There's a kitty in
here. There's a stowaway.
Yeah, so this whole time,
Hazel.
I bet you couldn't hear this in the background because she's a sneaky one. But this whole time, lingering just beyond sight of the microphone, behind a curtain of acoustic foam, is my cat, Hazel. Yeah. One of my cats.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's silky.
That's jolly.
She looks a little bit like a lemur. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's jolly.
She has a lemur face.
She does. She has a face like a lemur.
What else is jolly? I'll think of something jolly. Let me think here. My new benefits are about to kick in at work.
Woo! Yay!
Yay!
Three cheers for Andrea's benefits.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, yeah.
I'm
lots
so
of cheers.
Exciting.
Yeah, I know.
It is so weird that I don't have a boyfriend.
Yeah, shocking. Every time I come over, you do end up talking about something work-related. I'm just like, yeah.
I know. Okay. That's my whole life right now.
I know, yeah. That sounds very adulthood-like. And I've managed to, skim the surface of that and avoid it so far. A little bit of a Peter Pan thing going on. But I'm going to have to break down and get a job, and then I'm sure I'll talk about things like benefits, too. medical coverage.
It's interesting. Especially when you start talking about health spending accounts and stuff.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, we ended off on a jolly enough note. That's enough jolly. Okay, so.
Okay.
It's okay. You can get some jolly all over the next podcast. Yeah.
I'll tell you all about my benefits.
Yeah,
I'll have
yeah.
kicked in by
you can,
then. Woo-hoo!
Yeah, that's what you can taint the next podcast.
Something
for you guys to look
forward
to.
I have to taint it with something.
Well, to prevent her from doing that, you know what she could do? You could send us so much stuff to talk about that we just don't get around to benefits and such.
We'll get around to benefits. I will make the time.
Okay, but even if it's a futile effort, you should still send things to twoscaredsiblings@gmail.com. Our email address, and it can be anything personal to you, something that you wrote, not something that anyone else wrote, just your original content, or something that actually happened to you in your life, a weird nightmare, or weird recurring dream, or weird dream in general, weird family stories, something weird happened, eerie
something
shit.
Horrific.
Yeah,
horrific,
something horrific. Yeah, or eerie. Like I said last time, yeah, we're eerie. Setting the bar low and it's fine. Yeah, it's just something
just tell
mystifying.
Us some weird ass stories and yes. We will read it out.
Yeah, we'll read it out and Hazel will be listening too. Stay jolly. Bye.
Bye.